Channel Radio. Great music and talk.
Jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
The Networkers Networking Event, a full-day event helping business owners to understand how to network more effectively and efficiently. Three great speakers, eight of the best networking, masterminding and business support groups in Kent, and 50-plus great business owners to meet, network with and connect with. Join us at the Networkers Networking Event. It's an event not to be missed.
ZC Live, bringing a digital one-day event to Kent with Zoe Cairns. ZC Live. Register for your free place. Visit zcsocialmedia.com. Interested in collaborating with like-minded Kent businesses? Join our supplymybusiness.co.uk community today and start growing your Kent business network for just £20 a month.
The Venues and Events Expo Southeast at the Kent Event Centre, Detling, on Thursday, 31st of May. A one-day exhibition for event professionals, venue finders, PAs, VAs and business owners who want to connect with amazing venues and great suppliers for their events. Whether you are organising a business event, meeting, seminar, conference, workshop, team building or a corporate party, you will find everything you need in one place. We have a variety of talks from industry experts and a series of masterclasses including team building, well-being and much more. To find out more and to book your free place, visit www.venueseventsexpo.co.uk.
This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on Kent Business Radio, on Biz Radio and channelradio.co.uk/2 on this Tuesday, the 17th of April, with me, Paul Andrews, and Mr. Marvellous Martin White.
Hi, everyone. Good to be back.
I've got a bazillion tweets still, so I'm just going to do a couple more tweets before we talk to our next guest.
They're
coming in like mad now. It's like it's snowing. It's like it's raining
tweets.
Say
that. Yeah. We've just got the sunshine.
I know. I've got a tweet from Athel Bray, and they say, Vanilla Web Business Bunker, we'd be grateful if you could remind all registered charities that we are able to offer discounts on training. We know how tight budgets can be, but shouldn't be a barrier to training charity staff and receiving excellent personal development. If you want to find out more, you can email me, and that's from Kate, and you can email Kate at kate@athelbray.co.uk, and Athelbray is A-T-H-E-L-B-R-A-E. I've also had a tweet from the fantastic folks over at, hold on, got to get me right phone here. I've got dozens of phones with all my tweets on. From the lovely folks at New Appointments Group, based over there at Discovery Park in Sandwich, and they say, having a great show, Vanilla Web. We're tuned in whilst recruiting our socks off. A big sunny hello to all our Twitter chums, and that's from New Appointments Group, the lovely folks, as I say, over there at Discovery Park.
We've also had a couple of tweets from Sunil at Kent Traffic Law. Hi, Sunil. I expect you've been following the Ant McFarlane case quite closely recently. I'm sure you've got something to say about that in terms of the level of fine and what have you.
£86,000
yeah.
In 20 months. Yeah.
I could tell you a story about Sunil that would blow your socks off.
Oh, you've heard that one as well, have you, Barry? You'll tell us later.
He is a genius. Yeah. If you want to know about it, yeah. I'll tell you about
okay.
his case.
Yeah. Well, for those of you that don't know, Sunil is a barrister, a criminal law barrister originally. Yeah. I think he still practices criminal law. But he is also Kent Traffic Law, so he specialises in helping people that perhaps have been stopped for speeding, for example, keep their licence, for want of a better word. So, very useful man to know in a crisis.
Absolutely.
We've also had a tweet, Paul, from Alison Palmer.
Have we?
Who's listening in from
the
FSB.
Federation of Small Business.
Yeah, so hi, Alison, and thanks for listening.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm gonna flash through a couple, and then we're going to talk to our next guest. I've had a tweet from Alex Waterton, and he says, Vanilla Web, hello, Martin, David, and everyone at the Business Bunker. We're all tuned in here at F Keys. Would your business benefit from a monthly visit from a Microsoft certified trainer? If so, contact F Keys. That's a Twitter handle at F Keys.
I've worked with Alex.
Yeah,
before.
He's brilliant, isn't he?
He is absolutely outstanding.
He's amazing. What that man knows about, he knows more than Microsoft know about Microsoft Office. Without, and everybody in the studio's nodding their heads here. The man's a genius, as far as...
Because we all know how little Microsoft knows.
yeah, that is true. But no, Alex is brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. And I can't recommend him highly enough for making you more productive with Office technology.
What struck me about him, he is totally focused on what would you like to be able to do that technology can help you, rather than his technology, it can do this.
Exactly. That's exactly the point, isn't it? Yeah. It's improving your productivity by using the tool, not telling you how to use the tool to change what you do. Absolutely. Absolutely. I've also had a tweet from the lovely folks at Business Diaries Tunbridge Wells. And they say, could we have a Business Bunker shout out, please, Vanilla Web? Wishing you a great show. Please, can we have a mention for the Business Diaries Tunbridge Wells on the 26th of April at 7:30 p.m. at the Hotel Divin in Tunbridge Wells? Tickets are just £10 each. Five fabulous storytellers and a bite to eat and some drinky poos, and their stories are ready to share. The Biz Diaries, for anyone that hasn't been, is a completely different style of networking, and it's really, really good fun. I've been to all of them so far in Medway, and they're just launching them in Tunbridge Wells. Brilliant fun. So do book that out. Follow them on the Twitter, The Biz, B-I-Z, Diaries, T-W.
Yeah. Blast is back.
It is.
Which is the Kent Foundation helping young people get into business annual networking event. It's held at Maidstone TV Studios, and I must say it's always massively well-intended. I think they had about 300 people there last year.
Mm.
So it's a great opportunity for young business owners to showcase their business. And actually, for everybody else, it's a great opportunity not only to see that, but also to network as well on the evening. So it's Tuesday, the 1st of May, and it's 6 till 8 p.m. at Maidstone TV Studios, and it only happens once a year, so it's definitely worth going to. KentFoundation.org, I think, is probably the best website to look at. There is an Eventbrite link, but as always, they're totally unreadable.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, do go along. It's a fantastic event, as Martin says.
When are Eventbrite going to grasp tiny URLs?
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
It's crazy.
Mm. I had a tweet from Bruce Kidd, and we were talking about Bruce earlier. He says, having a fantastic show today on the Business Bunker. Please give the team, OASIS, a shout-out for their hard work. So a big shout-out for all the folks at Operational Accounting Systems, OASIS, and thank you for listening. Do you know what we're going to do now? We're going to talk to our next guest. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the show for the very first time Mr. Barry Bonds of Jarman Solicitors. Barry, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure entirely.
It's a pleasure to have you on the Bunker Show. Why don't you kick off by telling us a little bit about Jarman's first?
Okay. Jarman's has been around for almost 30 years.
So it's a new startup.
Yep. Last year, it changed ownership. I transferred the ownership to the new guy who owns it, Jay Sahota.
Right.
And he's going stratospheric with it.
Okay.
It's doubled in size. We have a litigation team of about 9 people now.
Great.
Jay likes to say that we're a Kent firm that punches above its weight.
Okay.
The kind of clients we handle. We've got some big American, European, and Pacific Rim clients, as well as a high street and Kent-based practice.
Okay. Do you specialise in particular areas of law, or are you general service practice?
We have two types of practice within the same firm. It's as the usual private client stuff, probate, trust, conveyancing, divorce, and then we have the bigger corporate stuff, and also a big team of litigators, as I said, handling disputes.
Okay. Is that something that you've noticed has become more prevalent in the last few years, or are there a lot more disputes about, or has it kind of always been similar?
I think they're always there. What leads you to grow a practice is your contacts.
Right.
Jay has hundreds, maybe thousands of contacts. He's very well connected. And you begin to get a reputation for things as well. He has a good reputation, and we have a good reputation for litigation.
Yeah, I just wondered if we were becoming more litigious like our cousins over in the US or not.
I think we're becoming more argumentative.
No, we're not.
Exactly. And
his humour is very one-dimensional.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah, probably, it's pretty poor.
Probably picked up on that.
It was almost show-stopping. People are becoming less satisfied with what they're being dished out. And that's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing.
Yeah, sure. Okay. In terms of, you're based in Medway, you say?
We're in Sittingbourne.
In Sittingbourne, yeah. I do
beg your
pardon.
We have a London office as well.
And you have a London office too. Okay.
The firm goes back a lot longer than 30 years, though, doesn't it? Because I remember I came to an after-hours networking event recently.
When they first opened in 1892.
Well, exactly. So back then, was it Wins?
It was Winch, Grinstead and Winch.
Yeah.
Over 100 years ago.
Just say that again.
Winch. Grinstead and Winch.
Winch, Grinstead and Rinch. A very sort of Dickensian.
That could only be better if they were called Grinch rather than Winch, Grinch, wouldn't they, really?
Yeah. That's right, almost. Yeah. And they were the traditional practice on top of a bank in a high street. Mm. We're now a modern office block, two large floors, 7,000 square feet, with computers and...
Well,
all the savvy.
I was going to kind of ask you about that, Barry. In my own business, one of the joys of being in business for me is disruption. I love disrupting things and things that have been around for years and taking them apart and never putting them back again and all that kind of stuff. And I love disruptive technology. And of course, digital facilitates that in a big way. And disintermediation as well is happening a lot with a lot of service businesses. From your point of view, have you seen much effect of new technology and new ways of doing things on legal firms?
Absolutely. It's the much abused word these days is massive, but in the legal profession, it's had a massive effect. Mm. When we set up the practice 30 years ago, there were three of us and we had 50 employees. Mm. We had one computer. Mm. By the end of the recession in 1994, we were almost bust, but we took on maybe 20, 25 computers. Mm. And that led to another pruning of staff.
Yeah.
So that was disruptive. Mm. The big pressure now is getting work out the door fast enough, but competently. Mm. And that's really disruptive. Mm. Because, as you know, you can tosh things out. Mm. But to do it properly so that people come back and say, hey, yeah, that was a good job. Mm. I liked what you did.
Yeah.
What's amazed me recently is just the number of websites out there where you can download, in theory, in inverted commas, legal documents.
Oh, yeah.
That you can actually, you know, pay a couple of quid for and, in theory, use in your business.
Well, I advised somebody like that perhaps a month ago when I was talking about terms and conditions of business shareholder agreements. And the guy I was talking to with his wife said, well, I've done all that. I got it far more cheaply than... Mm. going to you. Mm. And I said, well, next time we meet, do show me, because I'd love to see. Mm. And indeed, next time we met, he showed me, and the documents he downloaded had a jurisdiction of Arizona for disputes.
I was going to say, funny enough, you know, there is some merit in some of these things, but I operate as an angel investor, and one of my first things is shareholders' agreements. Mm. And the amount of shareholders' agreements, I start reading it, I go, you haven't read this, have you? Exactly. You've downloaded this off the net, and you haven't even read it, because it's a whole heap of nonsense. I go, look, you know, it says that, and I go, oh.
So is it very much a case of caveat emptor, Barry?
Oh, no, bit of Latin there.
No, and read it.
Right. Okay.
And if you can't be bothered to read it, go and see someone who can read it for you and then give you... Mm. a relatively safe praetzy so that you understand actually what you're taking on. Mm. And you'd be surprised at the number of people who do deals and sign bits of paper without reading it. Mm.
Shall I tell you a story to my detriment? Shall I tell you a story to my detriment?
Go on.
I was, about 2 years ago, I hired another member of staff and I gave them their employment contract and... they actually read it, which is really, really unusual. And the chap rang me up on Sunday. And he went, I've just read my contract with employment, and I'm happy with that. He said, at the back, it makes reference to the company's internet and digital media engagement standards. And I've gone, yeah, we got it all covered. He said, yeah, but there's no copy of it here. Oh, I'm sorry, we must have left it out. So on Monday, I rang the office, and I went, have we got a copy of our internet standards? And they went, what? Our internet usage policy. Don't know what you're talking about. So it's in our contract. And they went, is it? Where do we get the contract from? I don't know. You gave it to us. I'm thinking, where did I get the contract from? And I suddenly remembered I got it from my ex-wife, from her company. Yeah. So I rang her up. And I went, Chris, I nicked your contract when we got divorced. Yeah, fine, whatever. I said, internet policy. She said, no, no, we never got round to writing that at the time. We just had it. Oops.
Or actually,
it happens all the time.
Yeah.
What she really said was, don't worry about it. You did pay for it.
Yeah. But you're absolutely right, Barry. I mean, this is one of the this can be one of the problems, can't it? That, you know, people can become very sloppy about what they do because it's just cheap. You know, it's 50 quid to download a form, but it's not worth the 50 quid. That's the problem.
That is the problem.
Yeah.
What's, I mean, on a kind of litigation level, because that's very much your kind of background, isn't it?
Certainly my background.
Yeah. What's the bread and butter kind of litigation work? Where do businesses consistently get themselves into trouble? Is it not paying people for goods and services that they've acquired, and therefore they're being chased on a kind of credit level? What do you get involved with day to day? And you think, crikey, I can't believe this is still happening in this day and age. What is it that keeps you guys busy?
I think two things. First, a breakdown of communications caused by lack of money on one party, and that party having to meet a deadline for payment. And the other is either a misunderstanding of what is to be done under the terms of the contract, or doing something that doesn't conform to the terms of the contract. And you can have 1,001 disputes on any one of those things.
So the devil is always in the detail, as it were.
Always. And that's why lawyers take a lot of stick, and quite rightly so. Some of the most boring people I've ever met are lawyers. But the devil is in the detail. And most people can't be bothered to look at the detail.
Yeah.
I mean, how many of us read? I mean, I must get something through from Barclays Bank every other week.
Yeah.
You know, talking about the change in terms and conditions to my bank account. I'm thinking, for heaven's sake.
But
I'm not going to read it ever.
But this is apposite right at this very moment, considering what's been happening over the last few weeks, with the amount of people that suddenly realise that all their personal data is now owned by Facebook and whoever Facebook want to give it to. And what they don't realise in all their screaming and shouting is they authorise them to do that, because at the end of everything, it says these are the terms and conditions, and by using our website, you agree to them. And none of us, no one ever reads it.
You don't actually have a choice if you want to use it.
Exactly. No, you don't.
If you want to buy Coke, you buy it in a disposable plastic bottle.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
A tin.
Yeah. But this, you know, not being willing to read the small print of anything is just something that... I mean, it must be the same for you as well, Leon, in the insurance business.
Just
you know.
Nodding away here, people forget that insurance policies are contracts as well.
Yeah.
And there are small print, and that's what the insurance broker is there to make sure that you fully understand
because
you're getting into.
And that's what you get when you go to somebody like you, as opposed to talking to a meerkat that wants to give you a free cinema ticket.
Correct.
Exactly.
Where's the link?
Yeah. I mean, because that is the point, isn't it? People have an insurance contract. They try to make a claim on it, and the insurance company going, well, no, sorry, we're not meeting that because you didn't do this, or because it says so. And they go, I didn't realise that.
Yeah. I had this discussion. Sorry, I had this discussion with my wife last year when we renewed.
Did you win?
Well, I did in the end.
Have mediation? Or
it was about...
he's trying to be serious and we're kind of being stupid.
This was a quasi-serious but laughable problem because everyone goes through it. She bought a policy over the internet for insuring the house. And I read one of the clauses and it was about flooding. And it seemed to imply, but it wasn't clear, that if the leak was the wrong side of the stopcock, then we picked up the tab. So I wrote to the insurers and tried to clarify this, and it took nearly 6 months because they didn't want to specify what actually would happen if the pipe broke the wrong side of the stopcock.
Right.
Had there been a claim, I shudder to think what they would have done to avoid the print in their contract.
Yeah.
That's why I always say to my wife and others, use a broker. Mm-hmm. Use a broker for everything.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more expensive.
I must ask Barry about a TV series, which I know Jay watches. He's a big fan of The Good Fight on More 4.
I don't know that.
You don't. Clearly don't watch it.
No, I don't watch TV, period.
Well, this is set in a legal firm in New York, and it's all very glamorous. Lovely, you know, it's clients that are paying you $100,000 a month retainer, and it's all big money stuff. But I was just wondering how close to reality that was, but it doesn't sound like it's anywhere near. near reality for what you do day to day.
You'd be surprised. Yeah. It is reality in some cases.
Yeah.
I just want to kind of touch base with you, Barry, on this, because this is something close to my heart, what the radio show is about, which is about small businesses and startups and people getting into business for the first time. And again, as I say, as an investor in startup businesses, and I also ran an incubator for a while, trying to advise people, you know, probably it's the same when we're going to talk to Leon in a minute. It's the same issue here, you know, with insurances when you first start a business, because people don't have much money at startup phase and they try to cut their cloth accordingly. And they go, well, you know, we'll take insurance out when we can afford it. And, you know, well, at the moment we can't afford legal help with doing this. But for me, that drives me nuts, because those things are the most important thing. If you don't get them right up front, then trying to undo them longer term becomes harder and harder. So could, from your point of view, Barry, as a startup business that's going to incorporate as a limited company, what kind of things should they look at the very baseline to start off with?
Let's take two people. Let's say a husband and wife. First thing they should do is make sure there are wills in place so that if a catastrophe happens, either one or both of them are taken out, their business is taken care of, and possibly young children as well.
Yeah.
The second thing is, I advise them about dispute. If you're going to have a dispute, you want something written down. If you can't afford a lawyer, write down the terms that you've agreed for the business.
Right.
Who puts in money? What you share the profits over? And who's going to run it? Those basic things. And then husband and wife, if you're going to get divorced, what happens to the business then? Try and have a plan for that. Now, that's terribly dramatic, but those three things, the three Ds, death, divorce, and dispute, are the three things that most Polax businesses.
Absolutely.
At a very early stage, and even when they get up and established.
And it's kind of difficult, isn't it? Because most people don't want to think about those things, you know, at the time. They go, no, we're fine. There's no way we're getting divorced or, you know, I'm healthy. So we kind of, that's exactly the reason we kind of put them off, because we think, well, you know, it's not an issue for me right now.
But don't.
Even if you're not a married couple, you know, certainly two of those apply, don't they? You know, death and dispute. Yeah.
Divorce happens when the business couple go their separate ways.
Yeah, it's any partnership, managed, isn't it? It's anything of more than one person has exactly the same issues, whether you're married to each other or not. You know, you still got to work out how you're going to fall out gracefully.
That's equally valid for partnerships of sole traders, as it is for a limited company.
Absolutely.
I mean, and so what you're describing is like shareholders agreements and things like that, really. Yeah.
Okay. And that's a really, because again, the detail in that is quite involved, because, you know, how much, you know, do you have equal decision-making power, for example? You know, typically, I guess if somebody owns 75% of the shares and somebody else only owns 25%, you know, as the majority shareholder, do you have executive decision-making power by default, or does it need to be, you know, overtly implied within the shareholders' agreement? There's an awful lot of detail in all of that, isn't there? Can I make decisions without consulting you in the business?
The most difficult situation is where there is deadlock. Man and a woman, two men, two women start a business together. They do nothing about organising it, and then they suddenly fall out. And both have equal voting, equal interest, equal debt or equal profit in the business. And then, to get out of that problem, they often just chuck the kitchen sink at it. And that can undo the business completely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you end up in a stalemate, I guess. Absolutely. Right? No man's land.
Absolutely.
Nobody can decide either way what needs to be done.
And again, it's one of these, what I call happiness things. When you first get into, and it's the same with relationships, of any relationship, isn't it? When you first get into a relationship, you're all loved up.
Yeah.
So it's all going to work fine. And it's, you know, happy ever after. And, you know, we're going to split everything down the middle, 50-50, because we're totally in tune with everything as a business partner. And you say to people, yeah, but what if you're not? They go, but we love each other. You know, you go, but what if you're not? Yeah. You've got to have some method of splitting this up. Otherwise you'll kill each other.
Can I change the subject slightly and talk about wills and powers of attorney and things like that? I mean, I rather sadly, I've got a friend who's just lost her father, and her mother is quite incapacitated with multiple sclerosis. And Izzy's had to come back from France and help navigate through the minefield of, you know, 50 years of paperwork and filing cabinet and, you know, and not really knowing where to start. But also, the very real problem of power of attorney,
yes,
over the estate. And what would you advise people to kind of think about in terms of when and why? And, you know, is it something that you do now and kind of put to one side and just get it out the way? I mean, as people get older, anything can happen, you know, health-wise, and it can happen very suddenly. So how do you kind of minimise the adverse kind of impact of that?
The first thing is to think about this, and that is, if you have children, and particularly if your children have grown up and they've gone away and you are living on your own or with your partner or spouse, what happens if you lose capacity? For example, you get the onset of dementia, you have a catastrophic accident, or your partner does, then what happens? And that applies particularly when people have assets of some kind. They needn't be great. What you need to do is endow that person with the ability to run your affairs for you. And you can do that in two ways. First, to give them living authority, complete some forms and submit them to the court for registration, pay the fee. And that will allow those attorneys to run your affairs for you, even if you are still sensate but incapable of doing it. And the other thing to do is make a will so that when the day comes, your affairs have been dealt with properly.
Mm. The interesting thing about wills, I lost my dad a year ago next week. He, incorrigible old git, he'd written in his will that he insisted that he wasn't going to be cremated and he didn't want to be buried in the churchyard. He wanted me to take his body and bury it in the middle of the New Forest. And, of course, my mum's going, but it's in the will. You've got to do it. I haven't got to do it. He could have put bury me on the moon, but I can't do it. Yeah, I did find a way around it.
Yeah.
We buried him in a woodland setting in a proper authorised cemetery. Yeah. But just because something's written in a will doesn't mean to say you have to actually execute it either, do you?
There is no contract between the deceased and the executors. Yeah. So I had this problem. A friend phoned me last week and put exactly that problem to me.
Yeah.
He said he wanted to be buried, but we've made arrangements to cremate him. What do we do? I said, cremate him.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because it's one of those funny things, isn't it? That people think it's because it's written in something like that, then it's cast in stone.
Yeah.
Barry, we could talk to you forever, but sadly we're kind of running out of time.
Not at all.
If people want to find out more about Jarman Solicitors, how can they do that?
Go to our website, www.jarmansolicitors, no dots or dashes, .co.uk.
Fantastic. And there is an event coming up that you're running with Jarmans, which you mentioned earlier, I know,
yes,
but just give us another quick shout out.
Yeah, so on the 21st of June, which I think is the solstice, isn't it? We're running an after-hours networking event.
I thought he was going to tell us he was going to slaughter a goat or something for a minute there.
Well, we were talking about the Wicker Man earlier on, weren't we? We're running a joint networking event with Jarmans, but also Metro Bank up at Dartford Football Club. So more details to follow on that, Paul, but thanks.
Fantastic.
And it's at Jarmans Sols, S-O-L-S is the Twitter for Jarmans.
Fantastic. So do follow them on the Twitter too. Barry, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I want to come now to our next guest, and we kind of brought you in a little bit there, Leon. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome, also for the first time onto the show, Mr. Leon Price of Invicta Insurance Services. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
We know each other because I've done business with you.
Correct.
Quite successfully,
yes,
in the past,
yes,
but I don't think we've actually ever met before.
No, first time we met.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So it's a pleasure to see you. And why don't you kick off again by telling us a bit about Invicta themselves and then what you do, and then we'll talk about the insurance market, and I'll put some of the problems I've got at the moment to you in a minute.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, I'd say thank you very much for inviting us. It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure
to be here. We set up Invicta 8 years ago in March, excuse me, specifically to service the customers of Kent. Now, we do have customers in Scotland and Wales and all over the place, but predominantly Kent-based businesses, homes and other like.
Yeah.
My area of expertise is the commercial business and property areas, but we can do everything from a £7 travel policy right up to a multi-million pound factory.
Now, you're insurance brokers.
Yep.
As we've kind of made reference to a couple of times on the show so far, one of the things about new technology now is that everything tends to happen on the web, you know. So if you want anything, you'd Google it and then, you know, you find some comparison, you know, some stuffed toy of some kind that will point you at different things. And you pick allegedly the cheapest thing that you can find. So tell us about the role of a broker, traditionally the role of a broker, and why a broker is still important.
Yeah, basically you shouldn't be buying on price. You should be buying on cover.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the general public is saturated by adverts on the telly on a daily basis telling you it's all about price, all about cheap, cheap, cheap.
Yeah.
Cheap is never the best. Very, very rarely.
Yeah.
And there is those small prints. I was nodding away when Barry was talking earlier. There are lots and lots of things that can catch you out.
Yeah.
Insurance has a bad reputation for not paying out, and it's not justified, in my opinion. It's because people haven't set up the right policy.
They haven't got the right cover in the first place. Exactly.
Yeah. And if they did have that in place, then the cover would be valid, and they would get paid out.
Absolutely.
So,
And that is a massive thing, isn't it? Because, again, you know, insurance is expensive, but it's not as expensive as not being insured. And that's the problem that you face all the time, isn't it?
Correct. When you're mentioning about startups and businesses not or cutting corners when it comes to insurance, 80% of businesses do not recover from a major catastrophe.
Yeah.
Because it's the consequential loss afterwards that knocks them out. So you've still got to pay people's wages, you've still got to rebuild your business and everything else, and they don't recover. And it's because they've not got the right...
Is there now a greater onus on individuals and businesses alike to declare as many facts as possible up front now to avoid potential problems in the event of a claim afterwards?
It, particularly now it's changed, there's the thing called the Insurance Act now, which is supposed to put more favour onto the customer. The onus is still on them to be open and honest about everything, about the risk, and the insurer's job is to be open and honest about the clauses and the conditions of the policies, and then hopefully...
But also to ask the right questions and probe a bit more, as opposed to just, you know.
Correct. We will probe a lot more than we used to before. We'll do a lot more research on websites. We will go and visit customers anyway, and always have a good look around and do a sort of full risk review.
You see, I don't understand how an online engine can ever cover off.
Well, it can't. It can't. But
all of the questions it needs to ask.
The problem that you've got is the public and their approach to these things. I had a classic. I had an absolute classic last week. We've just ended a contract with an organisation that were managing some facilities for us. Okay, and they weren't doing the job properly, and I'd given them loads and loads of chances, and I ended the contract. And then one of the guys that worked for them came along and said, "Oh, you've ended the contract. I'm thinking of starting myself. Could I do the work?" So I said, "Well, possibly. But have you got public liability insurance?" He went, No. All right. Then no, you can't. And he went, "Why?" I mean, "Well, because if you dropped a brick on someone in my premises, at least I want you covered for at least £2 million. I'm not taking insurance for that. I mean, it doesn't cost £2 million. It's covered for £2 million. And the guy went, no. He said, no. And
it's huge false economy. The cheapest, I think, we've ever done a public liability quote for was £38.
Yes.
It's not an expensive.
It's not, actually, no. But so many people just kind of avoid it. Well, one of the things I find is there's not enough people that are aware of it in the first place, that there are some legal requirements when you start a business. You should have employees' liability insurance and you should have public liability insurance. And so many people, I ask them, "Have you got it?" And they go, "No."
In many ways, though, I think what's more dangerous than that is, you know, in high growth businesses, they start off with an insurance policy for them and their mate in the business.
And then never change
it. And then they've got a fleet of vans. Yeah. They've got 50 staff working for them. They've got their own premises.
And they're still covered for £20,000.
Yeah, exactly. You think, my God, you know, when was the last time you reviewed your insurance policy? And I know a high growth business locally to me that's done exactly that. I've asked them, I said, "Have you checked your insurance policy?"
And diversification as well. The amount of people start off as, say, a carpenter and then decide to go into other things. If you don't regularly update your insurance, you're only insuring for whatever it says on your schedule, that's what you're insured for.
Absolutely.
You know, one of the things that I'm hearing across here, you know, we've heard talk, you know, always insure on cover, never on price. I'd actually like, because I've had to speak to insurance brokers in some detail, one of the things I'd like to add is insure yourself on service. because this is the wonderful thing that you get from a broker as opposed to
absolutely.
You get the explanations, you get that extra effort.
My background originally, when I had a proper job, was in IT in banking. I was head of IT for Goldman Sachs. And when I left and started off, my very first business was as an IT consultant working in financial technology. And I went to work for a now sadly defunct company called Morgan Grenfell Merchant Bank, and I was hired as interim managing director. And I got there, and they said, right, we're hiring you, but you're working in technology, so we need you to have some cover for insurance. Yeah, obviously. And they said, we need you to have cover for £25 million. Really? How did you arrive at that? And they went, you could do us enormous damage, which is absolutely true. They're absolutely right. You know, with a software error, you could, you know, you could take a bank out of business, and 25 million wouldn't even scratch the surface. So it's amazing when you suddenly start to think about it, how much cover you actually can need in certain circumstances. But in my experience, and I want to hear your views on this, Leon, is so many people don't even think about it.
You're right. People don't even think about it at all. Mm. We've seen, in the years that I've been doing it, 500,000 used to be the set point for public liability. Mm. It's more like 5 million now.
Yeah.
So 5 million used to be for schools and colleges only, but it's pretty much the norm.
Yeah.
10 million used to be petrol stations and stuff like that. And yet, if you want to put a little stand to sell some charity stuff in Bluewater, you're going to have £10 million worth of public liability. Okay. Or they won't let you across the threshold.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Can I change the subject again slightly?
Yeah,
and talk about car insurance.
Oh,
because I know.
Oh, here we go. Hold on, I've got to give you some background here.
No, not
after 140 years of driving the worst old banger in the world, Martin has got a new car. Everyone, Martin's got a new car, and he's got to flaunt it, because now he's not going to insure his car for third party only. He's actually going to get a comprehensive policy.
What colour Mini is it?
I wasn't going to mention any of that, by the way. But what I did want to talk about was, I know you guys are specialists in car insurance and fleet insurance, and you've got a beautiful, is it an A40 van that you've got as well?
Yeah, A35, 1959.
Absolutely beautiful.
Have
van
you really?
You take to expos and all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, keep a lookout for that on the roads. It really is a stunner. But there's been a lot in the press recently about how the government has clamped down on bogus personal.
What happened that sent them up rocketing last year was the government changed what's called the Ogden rate, which is basically a calculation that they put onto insurance policy. So people that genuinely have a big compensation claim is paid out correctly. So if an 18-year-old lad was put into a wheelchair, he would have been given about 7 million, and they would have invested that and lived off that. Mm. Well, because you can't get any money from your investments now, that changed the mechanism, and now they'll get 25 million.
Right.
Well, that money comes from one place and one place only, the customers. Mm-hmm. So what happened last year is you saw a soar, and the year before, soar in rates.
Yep.
There was a complaint made to the government saying you've gone too far. Mm. So the Association of British Insurers said that's too much. And they've kind of come back down to a level playing field. So that has evened out, which is a good thing.
Mm. So the benefit is still there, but the actual premium for that benefit has now remained
sensible.
Yeah.
Okay. Sensible.
Mm-hmm. In the extreme
Cases, yeah. Flipping that to the other way is, unfortunately, the reason they all gone up in the first place is everybody that pretends they've hurt their neck as soon as they have a car accident.
Yep.
Happens all the time. People walk into the pub and go, I've had a car accident. Oh, say you've had your neck done and you get yourself £1,000.
For £1,000.
The big thing now in Los Angeles is the amount of people throwing themselves in front of driverless cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been dozens and dozens and dozens of claims of people claiming to have been run over by driverless cars.
Yeah. You always get someone out there abuse it. There's obviously the cash for crash situations at the moment.
Sunil, actually, who we were talking about earlier, quotes a really funny example where there was a bus, I think, travelling down to the seaside one day. It may even have been down to Margate. And witnesses to the supposed crash, before the crash actually happened, saw about 20 people get up out of their seats and throw themselves at the coach window. So they used to, I mean, that was no joke. That was
the serious one for everybody to watch out for is you come to a junction to turn right, and the car that's coming along that's got the right of way flashes you to let you go. Mm-hmm. You pull out and he'll drive straight into you.
Right. Yeah.
Because flashing is only a signal in the highway code to say, I am here. It's not, please go.
Yeah.
So he's done nothing wrong. You've pulled out and he'll drive into you. And it's always your fault if you've pulled out of a cyber.
Right.
Yeah. Leon, can I raise one with you? Question sure. of motor vehicle insurance using your own personal vehicle for business purposes. I do a lot with startups, and I had a nightmare story from a guy who was using his car for business purposes. A drunken nutter took him out whilst he was on the drive. I'm sure you know this. You know exactly where I'm going with this one. It resulted in him being charged with driving without insurance because he didn't have those magic words on his policy. Could you?
It's very, very important. And usually you can get it included for not much more than not having it in the first place if you do your negotiations properly at the first instance. You do need to have business use on your policy, and the levels of business use can go up depending exactly what you're doing. If you're literally like a door-to-door salesman with all your stuff in the back, you really have the high-end class three.
Absolutely.
And it works down to someone just coming to meetings and bits and pieces, like for personal business use. Yeah.
But sensibly, I think now also, most policies will include your insurance to and from a place of permanent work, won't they?
That's another key point to be careful of. Yeah. It does say permanent place of work.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So one place.
Yes.
If you've got a lot of people with a lot of offices scattered around, if they go into lots of them, then they need business use.
Right.
It's not commuting.
Absolutely. Funnily enough, that actually happened to me originally with some of my car insurances. I just had to go to my place of work, and then I suddenly realised I was going to more than one place because I've got more than one office. So I had to bite the bullet and go for business insurance. But as you say, it wasn't a lot extra anyway, because it's not as if I'm carrying tools or samples or anything like that. I think one of the worst people to insure are DJs, aren't they?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, very expensive. Yeah, exactly. So from your point of view as a broker, Leon, you deal in corporate stuff yourself. What's the kind of things we should be looking for in terms of the coverage in the early days and then longer term?
Key points is obviously the legal requirement, which is employer's liability. If you don't have it, you can be fined £2,500 a day for every day that you don't have it.
Mm-hmm. So that's employer's liability.
Employer's liability is a legal requirement. Mm-hmm. Yep. Public liability
even
is...
if you don't have employees?
Not if you don't have employees, no. It's only if you employ anybody, because you have a duty of care to them to make sure that if they are injured, the insurance policy pays out. Mm-hmm. Public liability you don't have to have, but we strongly recommend, because you'll find most people won't entertain with you until you have it. Mm. And then I would say the key point is what's called business interruption cover. Quite complicated, and this is where you really do need to see a broker who will work it out properly for you. And that's what I mentioned on before about consequential loss. It will keep your profits topped up and all sorts of bits and pieces in the event of a fire or a serious claim. So they're your key
for business
points.
People, I might add at this point, insurance life cover, particularly if people are in business on equal basis, get a policy to pay out the other half when and if.
I mean, there's all kinds of things.
If your shares transfer to your wife on your death, you need an insurance policy that will actually cover buying the shares back from your surviving spouse.
Usually it pays the deceased's spouse out. Mm-hmm. For the transfer of shares to the remaining partner.
Key man cover.
I was just going to say about that. I'm getting on a bit now. Mm-hmm. And the people that work for me, we were talking about this at work, and they were going, do you know, you're looking a bit peaky these days. We ought to get some covering. And I went, you should. So somebody came along and gave us some horrendous quote. It was a huge amount of money a month. And they all looked at me and I went, I'm not paying it. I don't care. I'm the only one that's not affected by this. It's your problem. If you want the cover, you take the cover out, but I'm not paying. But it is important, isn't it? That kind of key worker coverage can be very important. You know, if you're in especially a small firm where you're reliant on one person that has fundamental knowledge of your business, if they get sick, ill, or sadly pass away, you could be in big trouble.
You're not going to ever replace someone like that, are you? I mean, that really won't help you in that instance, will it?
No, but at least you've got some income to, try and prop things up until you can sort something out.
The idea is to bring in a very expensive, specific temp to cover while you find someone else to try and replace them.
Yeah. But this other the other kind of shareholder insurance is crucial too, especially as we do kind of live longer now as well. So I've got a will. In my will, my son's inherit the business when I pop my clogs. My oldest son's 33. You know, he's got his own life. He actually lives in France. You know, what's he want a business for? He doesn't want it. You know, so for the other shareholders, the minor shareholders, and the employees of the company, that could be a big thing. So as Barry intimated, you can buy an insurance policy that actually pays them the value of the company, and then reallocates the shares amongst the company that already exists. Yeah, what do they call that insurance?
Key man insurance.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Okay, and that's something that you as a brokerage
can help
look
you
at
out as well.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Okay,
it is.
Yeah, absolutely. We can talk about a lot of this, and I'm sure we've all got some more stories about insurance.
It's like a business advice session, isn't it, on here? Well, you pick up so much information.
People will listen to this show if they won't listen to the lawyer and the insurance broker. Yeah. And they'll go, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely, that is the point of the show, Martin. Yeah. It isn't just a comedy
just
show
clicked.
For you.
I mean, we've just renewed our sponsorship, and the penny is... dropped, is it?
Yeah, after 3 years he's finally worked out what the show's about. Yeah. It's about informing people about what they need to look at, and absolutely I know what it's like when you start in a business. I've started enough myself, and I know that money's always tight, but you get these false economies, and there can be nothing worse than having something go wrong and not being insured. You know, because it's like anything, isn't it? When you pay the money, I've just renewed my health insurance. It's $2,500, and you're thinking, and they don't even cover filling my teeth anymore, yeah, that they used to do. But the thing is, the moment you need that, you then will seriously regret it if you haven't got it. And that's the point, you know, that's what insurance is about.
Well, we will do a review and we'll say, look, they're your critical things. Yeah. Definitely have those. Yeah. These are what we recommend.
Yeah.
And if you can afford it, these are the
Nice to have.
Yeah, I would imagine, Paul, in your case, what you're regretting is the lifestyle you had before you took out the health insurance policy.
No. You see, that's what makes it even more sad. I've never sminked in my life. I deny it, Your Honour. I'm smink free.
I don't smink.
I don't smink. That's either drink or smoke.
I hope they're not listening.
Sorry, that's illegal, isn't it?
It was the last time I looked.
Yeah. Have you declared that speech impediment on
Absolutely.
Your insurance policy?
Yeah. I don't smoke and I don't drink and I don't do anything else. I don't have any vices.
Very strong on
smoking. Yeah. Cool. Leon, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. Very informative. Please use an insurance broker. Please, especially in business, it's really important. It's as important as using a lawyer to draw up contracts and things like that. If people want to find out more about Invicta Insurance Services, how can they do that?
Yeah, you can email me directly on leon@invicta.co.uk, and Invicta's obviously INVICTA, not from Kent. New website's coming very soon, but you can already find it at invicta.co.uk, but it will be refreshed at the beginning of May as well. It's going to be very exciting, very interactive and stuff like that. So, yeah, please get in touch.
Brilliant.
And very active on the Twitter as well, @Invicta_insuran.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we ran out of space.
They are very active, and they're one of the few guests that actually interacted and put up a very nice graphic.
Yes.
Who did that? Was that you?
That's my new chap that arrived to do our marketing called Adam, who's brilliant.
Well, pass on my regards to him and say it was a really good job and I was very impressed with that.
Thank you.
We're right at the end of the show now. I need to tell you about this because this is happening very soon. It's the Grow West Kent show. Now, if you remember, this was delayed from February when it snowed on the day that it was supposed to take place. So it's moved to the 26th of April. So that's next week. And it's at the Mercure Tunbridge Wells Hotel at Pembury. And it's from 8:30 a.m. until 2:50. The reason it's at 2:50 is that I'm chairing it and I've got to get away because I've got to go to something in the evening. So we're going to finish on time, even if I have to bring Dave with me to tell it to finish.
Like those, they're sort of random start-finish times, don't they? So it's 2:50 p.m.
2:50 p.m, I'm dead, and I'm off. I'm off to the Hotel de Vin after
Not
that.
Not 3 p.m.
Yeah, no. 2:50 and I'm not going a minute over. That's the way it is.
Well, hopefully Dave will be there to keep everything on order so that it finishes at 2:50 p.m.
Absolutely.
Did somebody say wine?
So that's the Grow West Kent Show at the Mercure Tunbridge Wells. There's six world-class speakers, which I can't remember all of them, but they include Phil Eckersley, who's the agent for the Bank of England for the South East and East Anglia.
Jonathan Neame, isn't
Jonathan Neame, yeah, of Shepherd Neame Brewery is speaking. Mm-hmm. Kim Arnold, Katie King, yes, of Zydeco's, mm-hmm, and Barnaby Winter. That's, yeah, some of the speakers that are speaking there. I think Drive Your Mark, Mark Goldfinch is doing a workshop there. There's loads of things happening. Two exciting panel sessions with a West Kent focus, three networking opportunities. There's a breakfast with breakfast rolls, morning refreshments and a sandwich lunch. Mm-hmm. And there's over £100 worth of products from our speakers that are going to the delegates. If you want to find out about it, growkent.co.uk and find out all about it.
Brilliant.
But that brings us to the end of another show. Once again, we've kind of run out of time, and that's it, really. Yeah. I want to say a huge thank you to my co-host, Mr. Marvellous Martin White.
Thanks, Paul.
And our three fabulous guests, Mr. David DeCara, Toastmaster extraordinaire.
Thank you, Paul. It's been great to be here today.
Mr. Barry Bonds of Jarman Solicitors.
It's been a pleasure, but more than that, really good fun.
Fantastic, thank you. And last but certainly not least, Mr. Leon Price of Invicta Insurance Services.
Round of applause. Well done.
Yeah, well done, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker show.
Thank you, Paul.
On Friday, our sister show, the Business Bunker Extra Show, presented by the lovely Amanda Flanders, will be on at 11 a.m. And I can't remember who her guest is this week, I'm afraid. Sorry.
You.
It's not me this week. That was last week. But it's Amanda Flanders and her co-host, which will be either
Gemma
Fairclough Haynes or Molly, but I think it's Molly because Gemma's away. But anyway, you'll find out if you go to Business Bunker Extra on this very radio station on Friday at 11 a.m. So do check that out. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening to the Business Bunker show. Have a fabulous week, everybody. We'll be back next Tuesday with another show. Until then, have fun. Bye-bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.